from Metzia Daf Mem Zayin. We're starting from the very bottom line of Mem Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara is quoting here a member of Rav Huna. Just to recall, we've been discussing how money is not koneh metaltalin. Important to remember, and we'll see this later in the second half of the day, that's machlokes, if money is not koneh metaltalin on a Torah level. That's Rish Lakshar's opinion. Yochanan's opinion is that it is koneh the metaltalin on a Daraisa level. It's only a takonah midrabanan, rabbinic legislation, that the buyer is not koneh until he takes the merchandise. Then there's another question about kinyan chalipin. Chalipin is when exchanges are being made. And when exchanges are being made, the pasuk describes the prototype, shlaf ish na'alo, person takes off his na'al. And there's a question of what is like the na'al. The na'al is the shoe. Could currency be used as a medium for chalipin? And we learned yesterday another question, could it be acquired through chalipin as well? Both of those are open questions here. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabba Amar Puna, Machar li Be'ilu. Let's say a person is holding a bunch of coins. Fascinating case. He's just holding coins in his hand. And without determining how many they are, he says to the seller, sell me whatever you're selling for these. And they don't specify exactly how many coins is being sold for. Whatever's in my hand. So what's the halacha kana? So we say the buyer immediately has acquired the item. And nobody is able to be choser. No one is able to go back on the deal. The kinyan does take place as soon as he says for the money. Since it's an unspecified amount in his hand, it actually makes it work. It's effective. But the seller would have the right for ona. So ona, the halacha is, just to understand, when you're paying for something and you underpay, you overpay, there's halachas the Torah makes that if it's, let's say, a sixth off, so you have the right to get your money back. So what we're saying over here is that, let's say, the amount of coins that was accepted by the seller would be a sixth less, let's say, then the seller can claim that the missing sixth from the buyer is still owed to him. So we're saying two statements. First of all, there is a kinyan that takes place when you say, sell me for these. As soon as you give the money, then it's kona, but it's going to be subject to lots of ona. If it's off by a sixth, it has to be replenished. So the Gemara explains, how does that work? Even before the buyer took possession of what's being sold to him, as soon as he gives the money, it works. What's the pshat? To keep into the cup, but if the seller is not particular to know about the number of coins, kana dechi chalipin dummy. Therefore, it has the attributes of chalipin, meaning if he accepts a bunch of coins without first counting them, he shows that it's not being accepted as money, but rather it's being accepted as chalipin. That's the big idea. Remember, if you hold that money, currency can be an instrument to chalipin, so that's a funny thing because it could work for chalipin, but it can't work for you're paying. So, what do you give money when you give money for? Is it payment or is it chalipin? The answer is, it really depends what you say and what you articulate. So here, what was articulated? A funny thing. Sell it to me for these. So it's a bit ambiguous. On the one hand, we could say, since he wasn't particular to know how many it wasn't the regular form of what you normally do with currency, which is pay for it up front. You're not doing that. So therefore, it's really like a more of a chalipin, more of an exchange. These coins for that merchandise, and therefore there could be a kinyan. Obviously, this opinion seems to be saying that the chalipin could be affected through a coin. However, on the other hand, Yeshua of another could be a claim of price fraud. He said with these. So meaning to say, normally in chalipin, when you're doing barter, there's not really a kind of ona is usually a thing about payment when you're paying for something. But since here he said, with these, So we can say, when he said machali, he said a lashon of sell me. So even though he said with these and it's unspecified, so it's like chalipin, but lamaisa, he said sell it to me, not exchange it for me. So therefore, you have both aspects. On the one end, it's a sale and there could be price fraud. On the other hand, the kinyan is not affected by the kinyan of paying. The kinyan is being affected by the kinyan of exchanging. So it's a bit of a paradox. Macharli ba'elu. The ba'elu makes that it's like chalipin, but he said machar. So it has or not, but on the other hand, it could be kona. Says the Gemara in a different view, Rav Abba, Rav Huna. If someone says, sell them to me for these, and the seller takes the coins, he's kona right away because it's like chalipin, but there's no ona because it's like chalipin. And chalipin, you're not going to have ona. Ona is a halacha that applies within paying for things. So now the Gemara says, what comes out? What comes out from what we said? What do we say? What emerges is that if a person is giving money and the seller is not particular about the precise amount of payment, we're treating that like chalipin, and therefore even if it's money, it could affect the kinyan. Says the Gemara, what about the opposite? Now that we realize that one of the key attributes of payment versus chalipin is that in chalipin you're less makvid about the precise amount than in payment. So what would happen? Chalipin umakvid olein mai. What about the reverse case? What if it's like chalipin and the person is absolutely particular about the value? In other words, he's giving, let's say, Rashi seems to say, even if it's a kerchief, he's giving a kerchief, but we want to know exactly, what's the value of the kerchief? It should be exactly the worth of the thing that you're giving back. So does that now make that the chalipin is not really a chalipin? When you're giving the kerchief in exchange for something else, but the second you get particular to know how many cents it's worth and that you should be giving something of exact value back, then maybe that's really like payment. That's what the Gemara has opened the Gemara's mind to such a question. Because we just said that when I give money, how do I know if it's given as Torah's damim or as Torah's chalipin? One of the answers can be if you're being exact and precise about the number of coins, or if you're not being exact about the number of coins that it is. So what if it was a kerchief, but you became all exact? Maybe that turns it into something that's like a damim, and then it wouldn't be kona. So the Gemara says, "Amar v'adam rabba tashma." Let's look at this brisa. The brisa teaches, "Raishay toifis parasovam," that a person is holding on to his cow. He's in the market. His friend comes. He says, "Parasol lama, your cow. Why'd you bring it here to the market?" L'chamar nitzarach. So he responds, "Because I need a donkey, right? So I'm bringing my cow because I want to exchange it. I want to barter it and get a donkey." So the guy says, "Okay, no problem. I have a donkey I can give you." So they continue in conversation. How much do you want to sell your cow for? He said such a price. How much do you want to sell your donkey for such a price? If the owner of the donkey does a meshicha, he draws the cow, he makes a kinyan on the cow. But the owner of the cow didn't manage to go take the donkey, to collect the donkey before the donkey died. So listen to this. Now that the donkey's dead, the one who previously owned the cow, he's like, give me my cow back now. The deal's off. On the other hand, the guy who owned the donkey is saying, too late. Once I took the cow, now you became the owner of the donkey. And now that it died in your possession. I don't owe you anything. We say the owner of the donkey has not acquired the cow, even though he did a kinyan. But since the other guy didn't take his donkey yet, so nothing happened. What's the pshat? I thought chalipin normally works. Must be. Since over here, they didn't just say, your donkey for your cow. They said, how much would you be selling your donkey? How much would you be selling your cow? And it happens to be that the amounts lined up exactly. And then they said, okay, let's follow through with the exchange. So therefore, even though it seems like it's really bartering and exchanging, it's not. What's really taking place is that you're paying for the donkey with the cow. And that's not a kinyan. That's why it's not going to work. Says the Gemara, no, your whole line of reasoning here is off. Amar Rava, I'll do chalipin m'shiftanskin in lokapti. What do you think a normal chalipin is? A cow for a donkey, and we don't care about the precise amount? Like, how do you think exchanges normally work? As if you're saying chalipin, when you're makvid, so then it's going to throw it off. It's like dumb. What do you think chalipin normally is? Just two fools in the market who say cow for a donkey, even if the amount's not right? It doesn't make sense. Of course, people should be particular about what it is. Just because you're being particular, it doesn't make it that it's not an exchange. It doesn't make it that it's payment versus exchange. Every normal case of chalipin, it could be that you're being particular about the value, and you're still kona immediately as soon as one party takes, the other one is kona the other one. So what's the case in the brisa talking about? What was the brisa dealing with? It wasn't a straight up deal, a donkey for a cow. The owner of the donkey said to the owner of the cow, I'll give you a donkey for a cow and a lamb. In other words, when they were comparing it with the cow and the donkey, it didn't really agree. It didn't really line up perfectly. So what happened was, it was really an exchange for a cow and a lamb. And what happened was, yes, the owner of the donkey had taken the cow, but he hadn't yet pulled the lamb. So would you say he has done a meshicha on his merchandise? The answer is not fully. Because since the donkey is an exchange not just for the cow, but for the cow and the lamb, and the owner of the donkey had only taken the cow, but hadn't yet taken the lamb, he hasn't completed his meshicha. So really, it would have been a regular chalipin. As soon as he would have taken, let's say, the cow and the lamb, then the other party would have owned the donkey immediately. And had the donkey then died, it would have been his loss. But since here, he had only taken the cow and not the lamb, so therefore it wasn't yet a complete meshicha. So therefore, the Gemara has not really accepted that line of reasoning that we should say that if people are being mocked when they're doing chalipin and the precise value, maybe that turns that into damim. The Gemara does not accept that point. All right, so now we go back to where Ravuna started. If a person had just, coins in his hand, he says, sell it to me for these. So we say the buyer immediately was kona. So what's the pshat? Until now, we've been thinking that since they weren't precise about the number of coins, so it's not really payment, it's just an exchange. Says the Gemara, but that's all good. Clearly he holds that coins, currency, can be an instrument for chalipin. Because if coins cannot be used for chalipin, then it's not going to help us to say it's like chalipin because you're not specific about the number, but lamais is still chalipin, and coins can't make chalipin. So do we see Rav Huna holds batvei nasa chalipin? So the Gemara says a whole different approach. Lo, really here it's not chalipin. Complete mistake. what's happening when you say a certain number of coins without counting them out, whatever's in my hand. It's being konen, not because then it turns it into chalipin. A whole different idea. Rav Huna holds like Rav Yochanan's view. Rav Yochanan's view is that by Torah law, money is always konen. When you pay for something, it's konen movables. What did we learn yesterday? Then why did Chazal say the meaning of Mashiach? We're concerned that if you would pay for something up front and then a fire would break out, the seller wouldn't be motivated to put out the fire because he'll just tell the buyer, oh, your thing burned. So therefore, the Rabbanan said, you need to do Mashiach to be konen. Since it's only a Rabbanon, we say, a normal way of paying for something, an ordinary case of payment, the Rabbanon goes around. They said it's not kona. But an uncommon method of paying for something, the rabbis never decreed on. This is, again, something that we saw yesterday. Even if the reason may apply, but if it's an abnormal sort of payment, the Rabbanon goes around it. So in this case, it's abnormal. Why is it abnormal? Because you don't know what the amount is. You're just saying, oh, I'm paying for it with whatever coins are in my hand. It's like a good risk. You might get underpaid, you might get overpaid, whatever it is. But that's abnormal. Most of the time in a market, when you're paying for something, you know it costs $6.99. It costs, you know exactly what it is, exactly the amount of money that you're paying. Here, where you're paying with whatever coins are in your hand, that was the agreement. So that's an abnormal way of paying. So yes, it's paying, and the money's being kind of. Like it's taka, it's an exception to the rule. This is a case where even with Rabbanon, we allow the money to be kona since it's abnormal way of paying. Says the Gemara, Amalei Rav Huna b'Rav Nachman Shrav, after Rav Huna Sisa, you learned Rav Huna like that, and our Nachman Sisa, we learned it like this. So we have it, you know, like pretty explicit that Rav Huna said, a matbea cannot make chalipin. So then we know that Rav Huna's statement must have been that it's not machal be'elu, is that it's a kinyan chalipin, but rather, as we explained, that it's a kinyan kasef, and it's just being kona because it's abnormal. Fine. So now that we did that, that was the harder part, honestly, of the discussion. Now we get to the background. Very basic discussion. Bameh Konen. How does Kinyan Seder work? Whose kerchief is used? This is the question. So we have two parties. We have a Konah, the one, the buyer, the one acquiring the merchandise, and you have a Makna, the one giving over the merchandise. Whose kerchief is used? Who gives a kerchief to who? How does this process work? Rav Amar B'Kedah Shokona, and I think this is the very basic intuitive thing. The buyer takes out his kerchief and he gives it to the makna. That's what it is. It's good for the kona, the one acquiring it, that he should transfer it over to the makna. And that what the point of it is, so then he should reciprocate. I took out my kerchief and I gave it to you, and you thereby reciprocate, since you received this kerchief from me, you thereby reciprocate and are makna to me the item of merchandise. I think that's the more basic understanding. I think certainly intuitively when we think of chalipin. The lady Amr Bekele Shamakna. No, it's the opposite. The makna, the one transferring the merchandise, takes out a sudr and he gives it to the kona. Come on, as we will explain. So it's very hard to understand that. Why would it be that way? So the Gemara takes a stab. Remember we had a kinyan of agav? Remember how agav works? If I'm selling you two things together, you could do a kinyan on one and the other one gets bundled together. So that normally works if I'm selling you land and movables and you make a kinyan on the land. And again, I bundled movables together with it. You do a kinyan on the land. Now you're kona the movables. So, but here, it's not a great bundle because it's a kerchief and another thing. So you're missing land, right? The whole point of agav is that you're using land. So the Gemara jumps out. I'm like, the person is actually acquiring land by taking the garment. It's like the opposite. It's like mamish backwards. Kinyan Sudr can be used to affect a Kinyan on land. So you're going to make a Kinyan on the kerchief, and that will bundle together, and it will be like a Kinyan on the land. It's the opposite. You could be kona real property, right? Like real, unmovable real estate together because it was bundled together with the kerchief. And whenever you think of agav, you think of it in the opposite way. So if anything, if bundling together is effective, it's effective in the opposite way. That when you're selling real estate and movables, if the guy, the buyer makes a kinyan on the real estate, so he's going to anything that was bundled together with it as well. That's typically the way that it works. Here, the way that it seems to be working is the opposite. You're giving a kerchief and you're saying, since I'm giving you the kerchief and I'm bundling together anything else, so then that other thing else is going to with it. It seems to be a backwards sense of agav. That cannot be what's being understood. So Amalei Rava says, you're right. You have a Levi Acha. If Levi here, we're here. Again, Levi's got to defend himself. Why would Kinyan Sudr work that the Makna is going to give the Kona a kerchief? Why would it be that way? If Levi would be here from Mabakal Apple Pulsal Dinner, he would shout at you sparks of fire. In other words, it was, you know, excommunication. It was like, what do you make? You think that Levi made such a mistake and he thought Kinyan Agav was backwards, that you give the kerchief and your Kona the land? Everyone, Levi, of course, has a different idea. Misav is Glima Maknali. Do you think that the kinyan, the garment, is giving him possession of the land? That's not what's happening. What's happening is like this. It's exchanged for the hana, for the pleasure that the guy gets from the fact that the recipient accepted his gift. Listen to what the Gemara is saying. When you're gifting something to somebody, you're getting hana, you're getting pleasure. The makneh, by giving the kerchief to the koneh, is actually, ironically, in a backward sense, receiving hana from the koneh. So the koneh is giving him the benefit of receiving his gift. And in exchange for the benefit of receiving his gift, gamar makneh. So now the donor reciprocates and gives him the thing. So if you think about what the Gemara is saying, really both according to both opinions, whether the kerchief is the makneh or the koneh, what's really happening is that the makneh is going to reciprocate. Something was received by him and he's going to reciprocate and give back. That's the way the kinyan works. But what was received by the makneh? So the simple way is, let the koneh take out a kerchief and give it to the makneh. Levi is saying you could have an alternative way of doing it. The makneh can give a kerchief to the koneh and then the makneh will be like receiving benefit from the koneh because he feels good because he gave him the gift. So he gave, but then he received, and commensurate for what he received, now he's makneh back. So therefore, Tosfos ends up in a place where Tosfos says that I think we should think this is obvious. According to Levi, they use the Kalev Shel Makneh. That doesn't mean to the exclusion of the Kalev Shel Koneh. If you can use the Kalev Shel Makneh because ironically you're getting back from him and therefore you're reciprocating, of course you should be able to use Kalev Shel Koneh where you just directly receive. That would certainly be the simple idea here. All right, now the Gemara tells us Kitanoi, that reality is this is a machlokas tanam, what kli you use. Now we look at the pasuk, the source of kinyan chalipin, all from Megillas Rus again. This was what was always customarily done, klai yisrael, gula, tmura, for redemption, and if you're exchanging things, the kayim kol davar, to confirm anything, shlafish, and alif, and also a person takes off his shoe and he gives it to his friend. So what are we talking about? Gula, to redeem things, zumachira, that's talking about selling, the way you affect selling. V'chinu amar lo yigael, we see that in my miser, that the Torah says, don't lo yigael, and it means not to sell. So this, it could affect selling. Tmura zu chalipin, to substitute, refers to chalipin. Who's giving who? They take off the shoe and give to one another. Whose shoe? Who's giving to who? How does this process work? So the Tanakhama says, Boaz nasan lagoel. Boaz gave his shoe to the redeemer. So you remember this whole case over here, and that there was another redeemer who was the closest relative of Elimelech, and he was the first in line to redeem the land. And he didn't want to. So Boaz, who was the next relative, acquires the right to redeem the land through the kinyan of the Zudr. So what it means here, according to this opinion, is that Boaz is giving to the Goel, so that's the Koneh giving to the Makneh. The Koneh, Boaz, is giving to the Redeemer the shoe, and now the Redeemer is being Makneh to him, the rights to redeem the field. Even though Boaz was not the closest relative. But Yehuda Omer, it was the opposite. Goel, not on the Boaz. It was the Goel giving his shoe to Boaz. So that's like Levi's role. Levi's understanding, that it should be the Kalev of the Makneh. Says the Gemara Tana. Now we learn more about the requirements in a Kinyan Siddur. Kodem a Kli. You need a Kli. Afi Shein Shav Pruta. It doesn't have to be worth a Pruta. It's not, because again, you're not paying. It's not Kinyan Kesef. It's an exchange. A Kli, even though it's not worth a Pruta. I'm not going to show a little Kli. It's got to be a Kli. Avo Beperi Lo. This is something we referenced yesterday. It's got to be a Kli, but not produce. It has to be something that was manufactured, so to speak. If Shesh or Samar Philip Pairs, no, even produce. My time of Rav Nachman, what's Rav Nachman that you need a Kli? Amar Kar Nalo, it says a shoe. Why do you think the Torah said a shoe? Nalo in me, Dechrin Lo, it's got to be something like a shoe, something which is a Kli. My time of Rav Shesh is Amar Kar Lakayim called over to confirm anything. So therefore, it's an inclusive term, which means that you can use any instrument. So it sounds like you use anything. It's not saying that the thing you're making the chalipin with could be anything. It's saying that you could acquire anything with chalipin. So it's saying when you take the shoe and give it, you could acquire anything. So meaning to say, even though, let's say, fruit cannot be used to affect chalipin, but it could be acquired through chalipin. If I give a hammer in exchange for a fruit, once I give the hammer, then I own the fruit. It says the shoe. No, the example from shoe is not that it's a kli, but rather that it's a whole entity. To the exclusion of, let's say, half a pomegranate, half a nut, which would not be valid. So you don't need a kli, but you need something whole and complete. Says the Gemara, now we look at the contract of a Kenyan Sudar, and we're able to learn certain laws. Whose opinion do we write today? We write as follows, that we made a Kenyan Sudar with the utensil that is acceptable to acquire. So what is that language coming to convey? Again, we're just kind of working backwards, looking at what's typically written in the shtar of a chalipin to figure out who we're following. So when we say bimana, that it's with a kli, lefukim repshesh, marakonim beperish. Clearly we're coming to exclude repshesh that you could use fruit. We're coming to say, no, it's got to be a kli. To kasher, this, that it has to be acceptable, lefukim shmul, amar, konin, bimaruka, that you can use dried up cow dung. So you would say, even if it's technically maybe a kli, but now, you know, something, whatever you're going to do with it, but it's totally, if it would be made, even if it was a kli, but if it was made with cow dung, then it's so repulsive that it's unfit to be used and or totally insignificant. So it's interesting. It doesn't have to be worth a pruta, but it can't be a kli that's made out of hardened cow dung. It's not suitable. It's not acceptable. Lemikna, to acquire the levi mekelish makna, to exclude from levi. Levi said, whose kli do we use? The one transferring the item. Kamash mala, no. The mikna is to acquire instead of to transfer. In other words, it's always from the perspective of the one acquiring. So next time you go to the rabbi, And you're making a kinyan sudr to sell your chametz. So who's and you're using, let's say, a pen, right? That's a great kli. I don't know if it's worth a shavuot pruta. Nobody cares. So whose pen do you use? Who's the kona? Who's the makna?
The rabbi's pen.
There you go.
And you should keep it then.
So that's a very good. It's a discussion. It's looking in the dark. Very good. It's nice to mention it. Whether or not after you gave it, right? So that's the whole thing. You give it. Is there any reason why we always typically return the sudr? Right? It's Caleb Shokona. You give it. And now he reciprocates and he's machnek. Amazing. But is there any reason why it's typically given back? And the Gemara already knows that in the Gemara's times, the kerchief was returned. And the Gemara even gets like nervous. What if the person's only giving the kerchief because he knows that he's getting it back? Does that undermine his real transfer? And the Gemara seems to say it doesn't. It's an interesting idea. The whole idea, I think, is that it's a symbolic exchange in the sense that it's everyone understands that if you ever, it's not the payment, right? That's the whole thing. Can you say there's not the payment? It's not barter where it's exchanged Shabbat b'Shabbat. So it's kind of like an extra exchange. That's really what it is. You're getting an extra sort of, and that's exactly what motivates you to reciprocate and gift it, transfer it. So it's possible, it's valid, even if it's known that it's going to be returned. But yes, it should be the rabbi's pen. That's what would come out. Kalev shel kona. All right. What else? Bay, that it should be with it. That comes to exclude a coin, only with it and not something else. And we're saying that that's to exclusion of currency. You can't use something forbidden in benefit. Meaning, let's say you had a kli that was used in the service of an idol. So even though it doesn't have, a kli doesn't have to be worth a pruta, but it can't be isurei hana. Other people see, teach, bay, this that we say with it, that excludes a coin, which is suitable. According to this version, you don't need to exclude a utensil that was made from cow dung. That's just obvious to us that that's so insignificant that it cannot be used. All right, so it seems to be the maskana. What do we come out? You need a kli. That's what it seems. And it seems to be kelo shokona, and it seems that currency is not usable. All right, now we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah, remember, was talking about when you have different currencies lining up with one another. So whenever they're being transferred, you have to think through what is the payment and what is the merchandise. Because remember, when you take the merchandise, then your kona is locked in the deal. But when the payment is given, the deal is not locked in. So we said, asimon kona matbea. If you take that asimon, that acquires the matbea. My asimon, what is an asimon? Amar Rav, most anitos is similar to America. It's like coins that are given as tokens. So, you know, like Dave and Buster's tokens, right? So it kind of looks like currency, but it's not currency, right? It's a very specific token for a very specific. It's not currency that you buy things with. So what the Gemara is saying is that let's say someone is selling 20 Dave and Buster's tokens for $5. So then what's the payment and what is the merchandise? So the tokens will be the merchandise. When you take them, that locks in the deal, has to be paid. But if you would pay, then he doesn't acquire the tokens. Says the Gemara, Meisve, is that true? That's what asimons are, tokens that are given to the bathhouse. In Mechalim Maaser Sheni al asimon, it says that you can't consecrate Maaser Sheni onto an asimon. Right? Remember, Maaser Sheni has to be currency that you redeem out. So you can't put it on a simon. Or you also can't put it onto coins that are given as tokens to a bathhouse manager. So clearly we're saying two things, right? We say don't put it on a simon and don't put it on coins that are given to the bathhouse manager. So McLeod Asimon Lavamanus. Clearly you got the definition of a simon wrong. If a simon would be the bathhouse tokens, then it would be repetitive. Maybe you'll say the Tanna is explaining. That's not what the Brisa says. The Brisa says, according to Reb Dosa, you're able to deconsecrate Maaser Sheni onto an asimon. According to the Chacham, we say you cannot deconsecrate them in that way. And even though they have a machlokas about asimon, what everyone agrees, you cannot be machal them onto the bathhouse, onto the tokens for the bathhouse. So clearly we see asimon is something else besides the bathhouse tokens. Bathhouse tokens, you definitely can't be machal Maaser Sheni money produce on. There's a machlokas if you can use asimon. So what is asimon? So the Gemara says, Alam Amar, Biyochon Amai asimon pulso. It's a coin which is unminted. So meaning to say, it just hasn't been done. It's like, you know, it's like the last step of the production of currency actual stamp, actual mint, has not taken place yet. So it's going to be currency, it hasn't yet been used. And that's why we can understand there's more of a shaychus to it being a currency than a bathhouse token, right? So therefore, it's a machlokas if you could be machal master sheni on it. But in regard to our Mishnah, if it was asimon and not beya, for sure the asimon will be the merchandise. V'az Rabbi Yochanan tamei. Rabbi Yochanan is l'shitaso with his definition of asimon. Tam Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi Shmuel, Amdav Rachav, Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi Shmuel say the same thing. They hold in the same way. Because we just came out, it's a machlokas. According to Rabbi Dosa, you can be machal master sheni on an asimon, even though it's not minted yet. So Rabbi Dosa, the Amar, and he holds that even an unminted coin, you could still be Mechal Maaser Sheni on it. Rabbi Shmuel Mahi, where's Rabbi Shmuel that says the same thing to Tanya? The Torah uses a lashon of Maaser Sheni, you bind up the money in your hand. So why does the Torah say Vitzarta? It's an atypical word. So the Rav goes over Nitzar V'yad, you could use anything bound in your hand. But dear Rabbi Shmuel, what does that mean? It could have said, you take the money by saying Vitzarta. It's coming to say that anything that has a shape, like a tzura. So even if it doesn't have, even if it doesn't necessarily have an imprint on it yet, it's not minted, as long as it's, you know, like some form, some disc of currency, even before it's minted, that's okay. So Rabbi Shmuel is actually expounding a drasha from the Torah, exactly like that previous Tana Rabbi Dosa, that even an unminted coin can be used, for an asimon can be used for chelam asher sheni. Rabbi Kiva says, no. The tzarta means the Rabbis called over sheishbo tzura, anything which has a tzura, which has an image, it has to be minted. It doesn't have to necessarily be a silver coin or whatever. Anything that has any sort of currency that has an image, but it has to have an image. So the ma'aser, we end up, it's a machlokas by ma'aser sheni, if you can be machalit on an unminted a coin yet. And in regard to our Mishnah, just keeping in mind, unminted coin, whenever it's being exchanged with minted currency, certainly the unminted coin will be the merchandise and the minted coins will be the payment. All right, now we finally get to discuss Bemkomo. We've referenced it about two or three times, but now Bemkomo, we learn the sugya about whether or not most are kona from the Torah. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, right? So we quote the Mishnah, the Ketzad here, much of when a person wants to know, and Yochel Aserbo. Then once the merchandise was exchanged, even before you pay for it, you know, backing out. But if you pay for it before it's exchanged, you can back out. It's really by Torah law, paying with money does acquire the movables. Rashi says, what's the source for this? The source is from Pidyon of Hekdesh, when you redeem Hekdesh. When you redeem Hekdesh, the Torah says, V'nasana kasef v'kamlo. You give the money, and then it's established that he's the owner. So we learn from there, that's a paradigm to all sorts of kinyanim. When you pay for things, even movables, you become the owner. That's by Torah law.
Can that be the proof?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think because you would think of it that way, but actually there it's all yours. It's a little bit different. In other words, here we want to know between two separate parties, two separate ownerships. So Rabbi Yochanan, Bar Torah Mos Kona, Nidam Rav Mashiach Kona, why is Mashiach not Kona? The answer is, because Yerushim Elo, we're concerned, he's going to tell him, Nitzvich Yitachav Aliyah, your wheat was burned up in the attic. So remember, what happens is, he pays. So now if the buyer would become the owner before he picks it up, and then a fire breaks out, so there's no motivation for the seller to protect the stuff. He's just going to say, hey, it was your stuff that's burned in the attic. So now the Rabbanim are misaking that the paying of the money was not Kona. So therefore, whose wheat is it? It's still the seller's wheat. And so now if the fire breaks out, the seller will be motivated to protect it. Says Gemara, so is Mandashav, the Kabbalah Shlomi. Who cares? Even if the seller wouldn't protect it. Whoever made the fire and was negligent will have to pay for the buyer's merchandise. So even if the seller won't have to pay, but if it was the neighbor next door, the neighbor would presumably have to pay for being negligent with his fire. So it's not like there's going to be a loss to the buyer. So the Gemara says a very simple answer. Right? Not every fire is somebody's fault. There are fires that come out by accident where no one might be responsible. In Imuk Vuslaber Shuse, if you say the merchandise is still in the possession of the seller, Masr Nafshi Vitarkal Matzel, the seller will, you know, go through all the tircha of putting out, of rescuing the wheat. Be low. But if you don't say that it's still his, if you say that it's the buyer's, low Masr Nafshi Vitarkal Matzel, he's not going to extend himself to go save it. So that's the Rabbanan's motivation here to say, that's the motivation to say that the money was not Kona. So I just want to speak out a very interesting thing, Rashi versus some of the other Rishonim, in the way that it works. Rashi actually is mashma, fascinating lumdus, mostly maybe it comes from the Gemara later. Really, when you pay for it, you become the owner. A snapshot, like the rabbi said, like, okay, the Kenyan is nothing. They said as follows. They said that the seller still has the right to back out. Really, fundamentally, they left the Kenyan Moses as being the buyer, that this was buyer's wheat. But they said that the seller still has the right to to back out of the deal. So you might ask, okay, but then how does that help? But if he's still not motivated to put out the fire because he'll still say it's yours, yeah, I won't back out and then the loss will be to you. So Rashi explains that every seller has an interest in saving the wheat because he says, maybe I'll check the price of the wheat tomorrow. I'll save the wheat, just have it in my back pocket, so that if the price of wheat goes up, then I'll back out of the deal. That's the way Rashi always spins it. He's not saving the wheat so that otherwise he'll suffer the loss. No, the loss will be the buyers because the Rabbanan really left the kinyan was there. Rashi did a huge chiddush. The Rabbanan didn't remove the kinyan. The kinyan is there. They just said that the seller could back out if he would like to because the price went up. So really the motivation of the guy to save it, according to Rashi, is that he's always hoping that maybe there will be a jump in price in wheat and then he'll back out of the deal. Whereas the simple shot would just be otherwise. The idea is that the Rabbanan just uprooted the kinyan. There's no kinyan at all. And then he's saving it because or else the loss will be his. Rish Lakish Amar. Mashiach mafreshes min haTorah. No, Mashiach is from the Torah. My time to Rish Lakish Amar. What does the Torah say? When you kona from the hand of your friend. What does it mean to be kona from the hand of your friend? It means that the kinyanim happen hand to hand. You think of hand-to-hand combat? Hand-to-hand kinyan. What's hand-to-hand kinyan? I give the merchandise to you. Meshicha, something that's done with hands. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, no. No, miyad, with the kate, excludes lands, less pay not. There, the pasuk is talking about the laws of not undercharging and overcharging, and it's teaching you that when I sell real estate, it's not subject to that law. Why does it say Okana? Those are extra words. I mean, not the Mashiach. I was talking about Mashiach. Rabbi Yochanan Okana, my Avalei. What does he do with Okana? I would only know that the laws of Ono apply if the buyer is cheated. How do I know that if the seller is cheated, he was underpaid? How do I know that he gets his money? How does he derive that there's an itzer for the buyer to cheat the seller? He learns both things. He learns from Okona that Mashiach is Kona, and he also learns that undercharging applies from the buyer to the seller as well. All right, so according to Reish Lakish, Mashiach is Darai. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, Mashiach is Midrabbanan. Says the Gemara Tana, and so we learned in the Mishnah that not everyone agrees when you pay. Are you not Kona? Reb Shimon Omer, Kosha Kasavi Yadu, whoever is holding the money, Yadu, you know, he has the upper hand. So what does that mean? Once the buyer gave the money, according to the Tanakhama, still both parties come back out. Reb Shimon disagreed. He says, once you pay, the seller could back out, but the buyer cannot. Fascinating idea. What's the rationale on that? What does that mean? The seller can back out, but not the buyer. He's holding the money and the merchandise. So if the seller says, I'm going to give you back your money and I'm keeping the merchandise, he could. If the buyer says, give me back my money, I don't want your merchandise, he cannot. So you have Shlomo Moz Konos. If you would say like Rabbi Yochanan, that really fundamentally Moz are Kona from the Torah. Mashiach is only takana de rabbanon. That's why the seller can go back. Whereas the buyer cannot go back. Why? Because if you assume that it's deraisa, it's kinyan. Why did the rabbanon say that the kinyan is no good? It was all to motivate the seller to protect the buyer's merchandise. So in order to achieve that he'll put out the fire, all you need to say is that the seller could have the right to go back. Because again, what's the whole thing is that a fire might come and the seller needs motivation that he'll put out the fire. What's his motivation? That he's thinking about a possibility that the price of wheat may increase and then he'll always, you know, go back on his deal. And that's why he's motivated to put out the fire and save the wheat for himself. So therefore, you don't have to be misakein, says Reb Shimon, that the lokeach can go back. Lokeach can go back. Once he gave the money, he's locked in. But the meicher could go back and that's enough to solve the problem. If you say like Reish Lakish, that money is not kona even midar isa, so when you give money, nothing happened. The buyer should be able to go back. So why is Reb Shimon saying that only once money is given, only the seller can go back and not the buyer? If Reish Lakish is right, that Mashiach is from the Torah and there hasn't been any Mashiach, then nothing should happen when you pay the money. Even the buyer should be able to go back. So Amalach Reish Lakish, I'll be Reb Shimon, come in, come in with the Rabbanan. He says, yeah, exactly. That's what Reb Shimon and the Rabbanan are arguing about. Reb Shimon is saying that the seller can go back and not the buyer. But the Rabbanan said that the buyer can also go back. What's the pshat in the dispute? That's exactly what's happening. The Rabbanan say, like me, that paying for something is not kona even midaraisa, only Mashiach. Therefore, when you pay for it, nothing happens. The buyer can go back as well. Reb Shimon's the one coming along and saying, no, Dvar Torah Moz Konos is only a takana to Rabbanan to need Mashiach. And to satisfy the takana to Rabbanan, the rabbis only had to legislate that the seller can go back. But they didn't need to say that the buyer could. So the Gemara comes back and challenges Rabbi Yochanan then. Like Reish Lakish, we understand what Reb Shimon and the Rabbanan are arguing about. The analysis of the dispute is right in front of us. Whether or not Dvar Torah Moz Konos, Reb Shimon is Dvar Torah Moz Konos, the Rabbanan say not. Who says that it's kona midaraisa, like all tanoim. My kavin shum rabbanon was pshat on the machlokas. Says the gemara, you kavin ayu the rav chista. The arguing about is rav chista said, "Am rav chista kederush shadidu mishicha mamochin." The same way that the rabbis instituted mishicha for sellers. In other words, the same way that they said the seller can back out until the buyer takes the merchandise. So they extended that and they said that the buyer can also go back. In other words, once we said that the seller can go back, that's the ikar takana. That even though the payment was given, the seller can still back out. Once we said that, so we made it uniform and we said the buyer can go back as well. That's what the Rabbanim were saying. So now you really understand where Rashi's coming from. Because think about it. Analyze for yourself now. You see in the Gemara that if Dvar Torah Mo's Konos, the first thing you should think is that once money is paid, the buyer cannot go back, only the seller could. That would be like your basis, which clearly shows you the Rabbanan didn't uproot the Kenyan. That's not what happened. They said the Kenyan fundamentally works. That's why the buyer wouldn't be able to go back. The seller has a new ability to go back, and as we said, therefore he's motivated to put out the seller, you know, to put out the fire, thinking about a possibility of a price increase in wheat, and he'll go back. The only reason why the Rabbanan said that the buyer could go back is just to make it uniform. That was a step two. Once we were misakin that the seller could go back, so we were misakin as well that the buyer could go back. But even before all that happens, if you just think about what happens, someone paid money, fundamentally he's the owner right now. That's what's a very interesting thing. It's a twist. Whereas according to Reish Lakish, when someone pays money, what had happened? Zilch. Nothing. Absolutely nothing happened. Okay, we'll stop here.